Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome once again to Absolute Truth. Absolutely, this is your host, Gio, youth leader of LWYM, Living Word Youth Ministries in Miami, Florida, and an unabashed Christian, an unabashed American, and we welcome you to this new episode. I just finished reading a wonderful book by Stephen Mansfield titled The Battle, or rather Lincoln's Battle with God. It was an excellent, or it is an excellent work, and I highly recommended that it is also the subject of what we are going to be covering this Friday during our Friday night youth meetings. I invite all of you that are in the vicinity to visit us, 8 p.m. We are located in 3175 Southwest 25th Street in Miami. We are going to be discussing this book because this is part of our summer reading series. And the reason that I recommended this book originally to all of our attendees, to all of the pupils within LWYM Prime, and the reason I found this work so important is it's because it showcases two very important facts. Number one, this author is one of the very few that I have read some of his works where he is very objective about the subject matter that he is covering. One of the things that he mentions in the book, he says that there are poets that try to curb history. They try to paint history with their verbiage. And that I agree with. I know that there are many people that they attempt to color history in the way that they feel that it should be presented. So that maybe certain factual acts and others wouldn't be discovered because maybe that they might not be too convenient. If you need an example of this, simply ask Shakespeare and what he tried to do when he was putting together the writing for Macbeth, especially Macbeth. He had to purge a lot of the evil, a lot of the eccentricities of the king at that time. And this guy does an amazing work at exposing Abraham Lincoln for who he was, even later on in life. Because there are many people on the other side also who try to paint Abraham Lincoln as an unabashed Christian, a dedicated Christian. And this is totally as far from the truth as it could be. Abraham Lincoln, there is no proof in history via his writings, via the proclamations, via the inaugural addresses, personal letters that he wrote to other people. There is no evidence to showcase that this person, that Abraham Lincoln, the 16th president of the United States, ever had any intention of believing on Jesus Christ for salvation. As we know, and Stephen Mansfield clearly points out, you have a lot of letters, you have many actions, many third-party testimonials of Lincoln eventually adopting a position on Christianity, whereas he was a Unitarian, what was commonly known in those days as a Unitarian. People who believed in God, but they negated the truth of Jesus Christ as the Savior of the world, as God and man, as the Messiah, as being resurrected from the dead. They totally rejected that because they said it was beyond the scope of human reason and logic and nature to even believe, remotely believe, what the scriptures have to say about Jesus' death and resurrection and also the miracles and wonders that he worked on earth. And this is why they try, people like Thomas Jefferson, when they clip together his Bible, tried to bring Jesus to earth, if you will. Make him one with the rest of the idiots that have been out here and about, the Muhammads of life, the Joseph Smiths and others, making him a common criminal, a common, in many cases, just a common philosopher. Another Socrates, another Plato, another Cicero. And this is such a disservice to the message of the gospel, because it couldn't be clearer. But then again, you've got people like Lincoln who adopted such things, but then you have the revisionists of history on both sides, those trying to make him a dedicated Christian, and others who try to make him the lifelong skeptic. And neither of that is true. We have in history a man who, yes, he did believe that there is a God, but he never fully embraced, at least we can't really know for sure, that he embraced Jesus Christ as his Lord and Savior. Maybe he did. And maybe, again, just because we don't have this in letters or a testimony from somebody saying that he never admitted Jesus, It doesn't mean that the person wasn't a Christian. That's true. But at the same time, you'd be hard-pressed to find a Christian that has not at least told one person that they are a Christian and that they believe in the divinity and resurrection of Jesus Christ. So therein lies the dilemma. But the reason I bring this up is because when you look at Lincoln's history, when you look at the man himself, this brought to mind two very important things. And before I continue, the other side of this also, of what Stephen Mansfield says in the book, he says there are poets that try to color history, and that is a disservice to history. But then there is also the staunch historian who sticks to facts, but yet there are historians that, even though they stick to facts, they also like to obscure and eliminate a lot of what is present in the historical record because it's inconvenient for their storytelling. So we have to have that in mind. And I think Mansfield is able to closely tread that line, that objective middle ground where he was able to attempt to use both sides and present Lincoln's story beautifully. That being said, there was a lot of, I still find it worrisome that he employed a Calvinistic bent to things, especially towards the beginning of the book with some of the terminologies that he uses. And I'm not totally sure, and I cannot confirm if Stephen Mansfield is a Calvinist, but by his mentioning the terminology and the definition of it in the book, it leads me to believe that he knows what Calvinism and predestination is all about. And it makes me believe that he does believe in it. And of course, I've said it beforehand on this program, and I am not ashamed to say it. I do not believe in Calvinism. I do not believe that God predestined every single human act from the beginning of the world, because if not, we'd be blaming God for the sin that Adam and Eve committed at the very beginning, and he would be ultimately responsible for sin. So God is not a God of good, of light, of purity, like James presents him to us, and like God himself presents himself to us, but rather a God who is capricious, a God who is evil, a God who does things according to get his jollies because he decides to send certain people to hell and others to heaven. And that is just not the God of the Bible. But nevertheless, this is the person that Lincoln adopted. This is the God that Lincoln adopted in his own mind. And it was a total 180, because at the beginning of his life, he utterly rejected the Calvinistic God that his dad, his father, had embraced. And that he heard many preachers, many Baptists, many Presbyterians preach about. But then later on in life, even in some of his proclamations and in his second inaugural address, he speaks about, and I'm not making this up, read it for yourself, the second inaugural address, he mentions that it could be that God was castigating, God was punishing the nation for the evil of slavery, even though God might have been the one to institute slavery in the United States to begin with. But the reason that Lincoln gave that God was punishing the United States with war was because they went beyond the appointed time that God had placed for slavery inside of the United States. That makes absolutely no sense, and that is such an abhorrent theology, such an abhorrent doctrine. Think about this for a second. In essence, Lincoln is saying that God at one point said, slavery is good. But then man went past the allotted time for slavery. And what was or what is the allotted time for slavery? Nobody knows. Okay? They went past that, and then he castigated man because they went past the appointed time. So now slavery is not good anymore? Slavery was good before in the eyes of God, and now it isn't? And why is it that he couldn't speak much clearer to men to let them know this is the allotted time for slavery? Because if not, then what we'd be saying is that God was looking to punish Americans for an institute that he originally had told Americans to put in place. But then because he said, no, enough of this, and men decided not to abide by that because they couldn't hear him, he decides to punish them for going past that time, something that he originally said was good. That makes absolutely no sense. This is Abraham Lincoln, the man that we usually consider and others consider one of the greatest minds in American history. Look how twisted an ideology he espoused about God. Now, we're going to talk about all of this and more in depth on Friday, and I hope that you will join us for this. If you have not picked up your book, your copy of the book, I recommend you do so. Now, that being said, I must also claim a disclaimer. I do not recommend authors per se. I like to recommend books for their subject matter. I don't necessarily condone everything that authors say in their books. There are certain disagreements that I have with authors about certain subject matters and certain things that they say inside of the book. Like I've said beforehand, I disagree vehemently with Stephen Mansfield's idea about Calvinism, if it is that he embraces it, and other things that I mentioned that he mentions inside of the book. But nevertheless, it does not discount the accuracy with which he mentions and he brings forth the good and the evil of Abraham Lincoln's life, a short life, that is, because if he was assassinated, of course, he was assassinated by John Wilkes Booth at Ford's Theater that dreadful night. That being said, also, he exposes very much so the dirt. For example, Mary Todd Lincoln, a person who, after her son Willie dies in office, she continually visited seances. She even had witches come to the White House so that they can conduct seances inside of the White House grounds with other congressmen, with the Secretary of Agriculture, if I'm not mistaken, was also present for these things. And she was very much the spiritualist. That's right. This is something you're not going to hear. You're not going to read in many textbooks, because this is just the dirty past of an American president. And as we all know, we try to whitewash that history. We try to present them as infallible men. But guess what? They're not infallible men. They're just mere men. And this is the problem. And this is one of the main points I wanted to get to on this podcast. Men are not infallible. As a matter of fact, we are a product of that which we obscure. We are a product, as a society, of that which we decide not to promulgate. This is where it has gotten us, by eliminating Macbethian style all of the evils that man has encompassed, that man has espoused, that man has committed. We promulgate, we disseminate this idea that man is inherently good. And the truth of the matter is, when you read Romans, and when you read what Jesus says about man, there is no such thing as a good man. There is no such thing as a good man, especially as it pertains to salvation. Some people say, yeah, but Gio notices that the Bible says that God gives the rain and the sun for those that are good and for those that are evil. Yes, but remember that that is simply a pragmatic way, a practical way to showcase that there are those that abide by the law more strictly than others who are just, who couldn't care that they are criminals, who couldn't care that they do not abide by the law, who couldn't care what it is, what evil they visit upon others. That's the difference there. It's obvious. It couldn't be more obvious. But Jesus says there is no, he even tells the Jews, he tells them, you being evil as you are, you still know how to give good gifts to your children. There is no such thing as a good man. This has led us to try to whitewash people's dirty actions, stuff that they keep in the closet so that they can keep their image squeaky clean. And Abraham Lincoln is among these men. And these are the types of men that we try to glorify. We try to bring them to the forefront as what we call great men and women of God. Even that statement is absurd. Because you're bringing glory, you're attributing some sort of mystical divinity to man instead of attributing it to the one who gave life. Notice, the great man of God, the great woman of God. Why is it that we don't use the terminologies, the servant of the great God, this woman who serves the Almighty God? There's a huge difference, and there's a reason why we employ words, ladies and gentlemen. And the second point of all of this is that we have a fascination with not wanting to hear the truth when it is not convenient. And this is such a disservice that we continually engage in, that it makes me wonder. It makes me wonder how righteous. It shows the weakness of this argument that says man is inherently good. Because if man were inherently good, he would want to hear the whole truth and nothing but the truth, no matter how inconvenient that truth may be. I mean, you read Lincoln's life and some of the things that he said about Jesus Christ, especially when he lives in New Salem, and he reads the works of Thomas Paine, The Age of Reason, he reads Volney, he reads Robert Burns, and some of those things, it utterly showcases to me and to the rest of the world that this man was a reprobate in his youth. Eventually, yeah, he could have come around when he was older, but he is not this mystic being, this divine being that many attribute to him, this person who was bigger than life, like they say. There is no such thing as a man being bigger than life. I mean, we see it right before our very eyes. Look at the Hollywood celebrities. Today they are, tomorrow they're not. And when they're not, the first thing that the movie industry does is that it throws them away because they're no longer useful. They're no longer useful to showcase the sexuality that they want to showcase. They're no longer useful because maybe they don't move as quickly as they used to, and therefore we can't do any more action-packed or liberally themed films anymore because we have to present something fresh to the kids, you know? We have to indoctrinate a fresh generation, and we can't use these old hags to present this old but at the same time failed ideology to the masses, especially to the youth. We can't do that. And the point here is the following. It doesn't matter what the truth showcases. You have to be objective in everything. It does not matter what the truth showcases. It doesn't matter how dirty, how ugly the truth is. The truth is the truth, and that is what will set you free. That's what Jesus meant in John 8:32 when he said, "You shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free." But the problem is you have to be able to say to the truth, it doesn't matter how dirty you might showcase certain things to be, or how good you might show certain things to be, I'm going to accept you regardless. And that's a problem that our generation has. Our generation is not objective. Our generation is subjective. Our generation likes to see things according to a subjective worldview, a postmodern worldview, a relativistic point of view, and that's not the way it works. I'll give you an example. When we go to scriptures, it couldn't say it any clearer about what Jesus, the point of Jesus is. John 1:17, "For as the law was given through Moses, but grace and truth came through Jesus Christ." Okay? John 14:6, Jesus says, "I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me." When Pilate is questioning him, John 18:37 and on, he says, "You say rightly that I am a king. For this cause I was born, and for this cause I have come into the world, that I should bear witness to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth hears my voice." But notice how Pilate responds. He says, "What is the truth?" I guess he was the first postmodernist. What is truth? What kind of a question is that? I mean, he's trying to make himself out to be this sort of Platonic or Socratical thinker, and in reality, it was such a stupid question, somebody should have bashed him over the head with that. But guess what? When you try to avoid the truth at all costs, you come up with these silly questions in order to try to make the truth step aside because it's inconvenient. And last but not least, anyone that negates the Son, negates the Father. It couldn't be any clearer. 1 John 2:22 and 23, "Who is a liar but he who denies that Jesus is the Christ? He is Antichrist, who denies the Father and the Son. Whoever denies the Son does not have the Father either. He who acknowledges the Son has the Father also." The Bible couldn't be clear about these things, ladies and gentlemen. And last but not least, aside from the points that we have established on today's program, being objective when searching for the truth, making sure that we do not deify man, because man is not worthy of that, only God is. The last point here is the following. Make sure that you do everything you can to go to the source. Make sure that you read original source material. Do not allow your information to be filtered by authors, by writers, by commentators, even by myself. Go to the source. See if what I'm saying is true. Do like the Bereans did in Acts 17:11. They sought the scriptures on a daily basis to see if what Paul was saying was true. And Paul never rebuked them for this. Why? Because if something is the truth, Jesus himself says it. He who is of the light, he who seeks to disseminate truth, brings all of his works to the light so that God may be glorified. There's nothing to hide. When you are innocent, when you are in the truth, you have no reason to be suspicious. You have no reason to try to hide anything away. You say, yeah, go ahead and examine me. But those that do, those that they embrace shady things, those that participate in the darkness, they never come to the light, Jesus says, because their works will be made manifest. It couldn't be any clearer. Go to the source material. Somebody might say, Gio, yeah, but you read the Stephen Mansfield book and you recommend it. Did you go to the source material? Of course. I mean, this stuff is readily available online. Just by reading the inaugural addresses of Lincoln, you get a sense of what kind of man he was. I'll leave you with this just to prove a point. In the first inaugural address, it was obvious that a lot of the southern states, they wanted to secede. Yes, for issues of slavery, but also because many people were just tired of many politicians and others telling them what to do. I understand that the institution of slavery is one that is evil, one that is reprehensible. I totally understand that. But trust me when I tell you, and look this up, there were many people in the South that did not own slaves, but that participated with the Confederacy because they just did not want government telling them what they could and could not do. And they themselves didn't have slaves. They did not detest blacks. They just could not stand the fact that many politicians were talking down to them, understanding that the people were the ones under this Confederate Republic, like the founders say or said that we are. They couldn't stand the fact that politicians were telling them, were lecturing them on what to do and how to do it. When you read Lincoln's first inaugural address, this is the sense that you get. He said, those of you that decide to secede from the Union, you are the aggressors. Read it. It's toward the end, of his inaugural address. He says, those of you that decide to secede, you are the aggressors, and I would have no choice but to defend, protect, and preserve the government. And in essence, he's saying, I will bring the full force of the federal government upon you if you decide to secede. Please explain to me how this is not a man who is drunk with power because he is now participating of the executive branch. How he doesn't use this veiled threat to tell people, I'm going to come after you because of certain issues. So we have to be very careful and analyze all of these things so that we can come to the proper conclusion, to the truth, so that we would not be deceived, and so that that information, the truth, would set us on the right path on freedom and liberty, which Jesus provides for us. Well, I want to thank you for downloading this podcast. I invite you and I implore you, please share these podcasts, these episodes, with other people. We are on iTunes, Absolute Truth, semicolon, absolutely. We are, these podcasts are available on our website, lwim.org. You can also visit my Twitter page. We're always placing new links and important things on there. It's at Giovanni DC, JIOVANNEDC. You can find me there. You can also check out my blog, uncompromisedtruth.wordpress.com. Once again, if you are in the vicinity, Miami vicinity, we'd like to have you visit with us. 3175 Southwest 25th Street in Miami, Florida, 8 p.m. every single Friday night. Until the next occasion that we meet, I bid thee farewell, and may the Lord shine his face upon you.